Episode 141.
When I do the service advisor's job, which is 3 or 4 weeks out of the year, I put everything else in my business on hold. I don't answer emails. I don't take phone calls. I don't talk to salespeople. I put everything on hold just to be able to try and do his job. It is so challenging for me having to get back up into speed on that for that week period. By the time Friday comes along, I've almost figured it out.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results.
Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and welcome to episode 141 with Scott Waddle, our first shop owner from the Great White North. And thanks for listening to the Remarkable Results Radio podcast from wherever you subscribe, either on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, Spreaker, or on the website. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Search for parts, get the latest technical updates, and sign up for their new Garage Rewards loyalty program at their all-new website, fmmotorparts.com. And who doesn't like rewards? Hey, let me give you a reason to spend some time on the Remarkable Results Radio website. Now, the primary reason would be the show notes page. Each guest has their own dedicated show page, and you'll find additional bio information and pictures. You can access any episode by its number. For example, you're listening to episode 141, so just key in remarkableresults.biz/E for episode 141, and you go right to the show notes. When my guest provides a special link, you'll see it there, and there's a lot happening on the website, so enjoy it. Now, meet Scott Waddle from Precision Auto Service in Langley, British Columbia. Yes, the first Canadian shop owner to grace the podcast. You will learn that success stories and challenges are universal in North America. Learn that Scott went into business because he wasn't employable. He got fired from his last three jobs, and we hear that a lot from our shop owners. He says fixing cars is easy, and people are the challenge, and we must be a people business. That is to include your external and internal customers. And Scott is all about the customer and raising the service bar. So why stick around and listen? Learn about a unique way his technicians participate in a tech network and help a trainer design the necessary classes from what they see coming in the bays. Learn what he values from his peer group and the R&D method of finding and implementing new ideas. And discover that he will build a new building after paying rent for the last 17 years. And there's so much more. Now get ready to learn just one thing from Scott Waddle. Here we go. A warm welcome to Scott Waddle of Precision Auto Service from Langley, British Columbia. Scott, are you ready to share your remarkable results?
I sure am, Carm.
Man, I have to tell you. Hey, I'm going to tell the whole world right now. My first Canadian guest. Yes. Eh?
Well, I'm glad to be the first.
Yes, and you are the first. I'm happy to have you after 100 and I don't even remember. I don't know when this is going to go out, but more than 130 some episodes. And whenever we get you out, you know, I'm going to ask myself, why did it take? No, I'm sorry. Bob Greenwood is from Vancouver, and he's been on before.
Okay. Yes,
but
you're
my first entrepreneur. First entrepreneur. I have a question that I think I know the answer to. What's got you fired up right now?
Well, there's a few things going on, but mainly it's the big project we're taking on right now, the building of our new shop, and that we just purchased our real estate just a week and a half ago. We closed on that transaction, and building is yet to come, but owning the dirt is pretty exciting after 18 years in business.
That's a great. I love it. We own the dirt, and you've been renting for how long now?
For 18 years.
Wow. That's a long time, and it's a big move for you. And I'm going to share with our audience, Scott has been so willing to do a series with us and for you on the progress of the building, the property, the architect, the permits, all the way up to grand opening. And we're going to create a series on Scott's project. And I'm excited about doing it. It's probably going to take us a few 3 months. It may take us longer. It's going to be this, you know, process that people will be able to listen to down the road. So thank you so much for doing that. I'm excited about that. Scott, how did you master your transformation from being a technician to being a business owner?
Huh. Well, that's a great question. How did I do that? Well, I was never the best technician to start with, I guess, and I've always been an entrepreneur. And when I left high school, I didn't know where to go, so I did take an automotive class at the local community college. And my intention was never to become a mechanic or a technician, but I got offered a job, so I took it. And after taking the job, I carried on and I did my apprenticeship. And of course, in Canada, we have a government apprenticeship system that works fairly well. It's not perfect, but it's a good system. And I worked at independent shops, and I worked for a number of them. And being that I was always an entrepreneur, even from the youngest age, always took, I had jobs well before most of my friends and was always looking for ways to make money. I just saw that there was a better way to do things. And so, most importantly, I'm not employable. I got fired from my last three jobs. And so that had to be a sign of something. And I was not that I was a bad employee. I was stubborn and wanted to do it my own way. That's how it happened.
I hear that from so many entrepreneurs. I know, in fact, I can relate to that in a certain way. That's why I think I've been almost self-employed most of my life, except for, say the last 15. Many of us in the U.S., and I know I've got a worldwide podcast listenership, mainly North America, though. I'd love to know, what's the Red Seal Canadian Certified Technician?
So you become a Red Seal Certified Technician after doing an apprenticeship program and doing and writing the interprovincial Red Seal exam. So there's two parts to it. I did a four-year apprenticeship, and at the end of that, I wrote the interprovincial Red Seal exam. So if you were to go in and just challenge the test, you can get a certificate of qualification, but it is not the Red Seal. It is not quite as high a standard. And I am also an ASC master tech. And so I know both systems. The ASC system is very uncommon in Canada. Hardly anybody does it. And having done both, I can tell you that the Canadian Red Seal exam is a tougher exam. The advantage of ASC is they make you recertify. And in Canada, once Red Seal, you're Red Seal for life. So I don't think that system works in today's technology. But because it's government run, it doesn't change fast. There are people trying to improve that. And recertification, I think, is important. As we all know in this industry, it changes very, very fast.
Yeah. It's good to know. Good to know that. And, you're right. There's so much dialogue here in the U.S. about not having government involved in a level of technician certification. So thank you for opening our eyes to that. Scott, what's the most unexpected thing you've learned along the way?
Oh, that's a good question. It's really about people, I guess. Fixing cars is easy. People are the challenge. I imagine that's the same in any business, but we all go into things thinking how tough modern cars are, what technology is doing, how fast it changes, but nothing changes as fast as people. We have to be a people business. And so that, I think, is number one. And it's not just people as your external customers, your internal customers, your staff. That's certainly a major component as well. We have to be really aware of the needs of our people besides the counter.
Scott, with that said, tell us your best customer service story.
Well, I think you have to do the unexpected. And so that can be a lot of different things. And, the problem with customer service in today's world is you're constantly having to raise the bar. Once you've raised that bar, it is now the new expected. And so you have to constantly be looking for new ways to impress. Because if you always do the same things, consistency, that's very important in business, of course. But when you raise the standard, that's the new norm to the customer. And so they just expect it from you. And so that actually, it's kind of funny, but new customers will always rave about what the service they got. Your regular customers, they just expect that kind of service from you. So, things that we may do, we offer a roadside assistance type program. And like you would have for AAA, we have the cards. We give them to our customers. It's got a toll-free number. They call that number. during the day, it rings to our office, and we decide what kind of service they need and how to help them out. But after hours, it goes directly to a towing provider that can, you know, unlock the keys from the car, give them a jump start, or tow them. But one of the things we do is, if we have a customer call us up and say they're in the driveway and they got a flat tire, if we look at our schedule and we go, if we got time, we run down there with a floor jack or an air canister, whatever it takes, we get that car, bring it down here, fix the tire, bring it back, drop it back off in their driveway. That's a little kind of service that we do that really sets you apart from your competition.
I'm talking with Mike Zralik, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. Mike, are you an extension of the technical support center we all know as Garage Guru?
Most definitely. You know, I spend a lot of time there. I'm involved in all the classes that go on there. I actually host classes there, such as our ASC test prep courses. So very much so an extension of that.
Mike, you're in the shop. So what's the greatest outcome that you see from the techs and service advisors that you're spending time with?
Not only are they learning about great product, but we get to talk shop. So, like, you know, I was in a shop earlier today, and we were talking about some electrical diagnosis he was doing, and he was actually having a problem finding some schematics, and we were able to work with that and talk back and forth. So I was able to get educated on a problem he's having in the field, you know, where I can share that with others, and I can share other ideas from other people with him.
Do you actually put product in the hands of the technicians?
You have to. That's, you know, in this industry, a lot of guys are like myself. You got to touch it, feel it, play with it. You know, just telling them about features and benefits isn't going to sell it. You put it in their hands, that's going to sell it hands down.
So you take the new Wagner OEX brake pad and you put it in someone's hands. What happens?
First thing they do is say, wow. You know, and then they start asking questions about the unique design of it, the unique shape, and the purpose of that. You know, and they're very blown away by the technology that we put into it. They're amazed by it, and they're loving it.
Eyes light up, aha moments.
You bet. You bet. And why is it taking so long to get this out in the market?
And I need them, and I want it right now.
Exactly.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. I've recently interviewed some service advisors in great episodes. What's the value of your service advisor in your business?
I mean, that's our main customer contact point, so it's extremely important. The right service advisor is so critical for our business, and we do talk in this industry about how hard it is to find technicians, but I think finding service advisors is harder. And, you know, they are, in my mind, they're like the air traffic controller. They have, without them running smoothly, we have, you know, two planes landing on the same runway. They're trying to control the flow of traffic. They're trying to sell the work. They're trying to order the parts. They're trying to keep the technicians busy. They have to keep the customers happy. They have to keep the owner happy. They are torn in three different directions at least, you know, at minimum. And so the right service advisor is so critical to this business.
Do you remember the day you left the counter and put the service guy in charge, service advisor in charge?
Our lead service advisor was on vacation last week, and so I was doing his job, and so with an assistant. And yeah, it is insane. When I do the service advisor's job, which is 3 or 4 weeks out of the year, I put everything else in my business on hold. I don't answer emails. I don't take phone calls. I don't talk to salespeople. I put everything on hold just to be able to try and do his job. It is so challenging for me, having you know, to get back up into speed on that for that week period. By the time Friday comes along, I've almost figured it out, and then I don't have to do it again for another couple months.
What did you discover while you were on the counter?
I'm still recovering from it now.
I was always a person, when I got involved in a job that it wasn't my main job, but yet it was ultimately under my responsibility, I'd say, wow, we got to fix this. This is going great. And I'd always walk away with a tweak or two.
Sure. What I do is I keep, in our business, we use instant messaging throughout the day to communicate from the technicians to the service advisor and from the service advisor offices upstairs away from the service counter, though I can see what's going on. what I do when I'm doing the services advisor's job all week is I'm sending my Skype notes from the service counter about things that don't work as well as they should. And so I come upstairs in the week and I got a full one-way conversation of notes to myself in Skype waiting on my desktop and my computer of, you know, fix this service pack in our system. You know, this needs, you know, just this needs to be corrected. We're doing this way. It's usually just really point form norm. Some notes, I sometimes don't even understand what they mean because they're a week old, but I usually figure it out. So I'm back there and spend a few days fixing all the little things. So the tweaking is ongoing, and I'm always I process like Toyota does of Kaizen, you know, continuous improvement. I'm never satisfied with what we're doing. We have to always find new ways to make life better. And if I don't know about them because I'm not working the counter, I don't know what to fix. So that's what I do. Those are the tweaks that happen here.
So a big week last week. And I have to tell you, I so relate to what you just said, because I occasionally just say, note to self, make your notes to self clearer, better. And, you know, I'd write down one, yes, or two or three words, and I'd go back a week later and I'd say, what the heck was that?
Exactly.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Hey, processes, great systems, they win wars. People constantly agree with that statement. Any unique system that's really, you know, made your business so unique?
It is constant systems. I mean, I've learned that through years and years of management training, from service advisor training, from being involved in the peer groups. I take everybody's ideas, I take them back, and try and find a way to make them work in our shop. And I know you've interviewed Gene Morrill before, and he uses the term R&D, rip off and duplicate.
Yeah.
And that's what we do, and that's what I do really well. I don't come up with new ideas very well. I'm not creative at all, but I see other good ideas and I take them back and I modify them to my own business. Why reinvent the wheel when somebody else has already figured it out? And that I think I'm really, really good at. I take other ideas, implement them, give them a try at least. They don't always work, but the systems are very important, and I have not created many of them at all myself. I've taken everybody else's ideas and made them fit our business. And that makes things work. There is a system here for almost everything, yet we're constantly finding new little ways that they have to be adjusted.
You know, implementation is almost as important as coming up with an idea, because people come up with ideas all the time. They can never actually make them work. So kudos to you, Mr. Implementer. Kudos. Hey, Scott, share one idea on how you can make more money in a shop.
Well, you listen to your customers and listen to your staff, I guess. They're constantly ideas, actually, and we just have to take them and spend a minute and look at them and go, can this be done? Can this be implemented? Or how would this work in our business? Whether it's something we see being used at a different business or a different type of business, or whether it's something the customer asks for that we're finding that we say we do that, or it, again, the staff, so important. They're actually in the trenches day in and day out. If they've got an idea, we really ought to look at that and see whether it has merit and whether it can be implemented into our business. I don't work the floor fixing cars anymore. So what I do is have a staff meeting every second week, and we take ideas from everybody. And it's not, sometimes it's just a chance to talk about the tool that isn't the, you know, whatever it is we're seeing, whether it be training that we need, whether we need new pieces of equipment, or maybe it is implementing a new process. But that constant communication between the staff and myself is really what makes that work. So we just look for new ideas. Again, I have very little creative skill at all. I see other ideas and I find a way to make them work. That's the way to make more money in the shop, I think.
Thank you for that. Social media, marketing, what are you doing?
We work that pretty heavily, actually. I'm a bit of a techie person from that point of view. We have social media. I mean, we mostly concentrate on Facebook. We have about 2,200. We do some Facebook advertising, very targeted. It's very cost effective, but mostly it's engagement. So we are very involved in the community. So whatever it is we're putting on or whatever we're involved with, we're putting it out there through our social media. We put it out through the business social media. We share it through our personal. And we see other people that are like-minded, that are doing things within the community, and we are helping them share it. And one of the easiest things to do in Australia, number one, we have to remember to keep it social. People don't go there to find out how to fix their car. They go there to be entertained mostly and to stay connected to their community or their friends, their family. So you got to look at it from that point of view always and find the way to make it interesting. I follow auto repair businesses all over North America, their Facebook pages to see what they're doing. And I share their ideas and stuff too. Again, I'm just ripping off and duplicating other people's stuff. But I hope they're doing the same for me. And I know through my peers throughout the industry, through business groups all over, that we've all given each other permission to nobody, say, in Buffalo, New York, is going to know that I shared their same idea and vice versa.
Right, right.
Because our local audience is very, very local.
Telematics, the future of the industry, autonomous cars, is it, are you concerned? Are you excited about it?
Both. I think a little bit of an advantage. We're in the rural side of the, you know, the outside of Vancouver here. So we're on the edge where city and country meet. These autonomous cars are not going to work very well on some of our rural roads. You know, if you got a gravel driveway that's a mile long that curves, you know, you're going to have to steer that thing. It's not going to drive it for you. There's no lines on the road some places. We still have some gravel roads out here. So, you know, I'm not worried about them that much. I'm excited. We do own a hybrid vehicle. We bought one in 2013, and we are actually possibly this week buying a full electric Nissan Leaf to use as a shuttle vehicle at our shop. We find our shuttle vehicle is going for 15-minute drives all day long. It's never driving far. And so why not do that on electric? And it'll save $100 a month in gas and showcase that technology. We'll get the sign company to wrap it up a bit, show it off, and make people know that we're comfortable with electric vehicles. We're comfortable with hybrid vehicles because we own them. And that makes our staff comfortable with them, but our customers as well. I've found that the new car dealers have done a very good job of holding those high-tech cars within their service base because they've convinced their customers that they're driving something special and that they better bring it back to them to get service because your independents won't know anything about them. And I'm trying to fight that in whatever way I can by not just saying, yes, we do it, but actually, you know, walking the walk and actually getting intimately familiar with them so we know exactly what we're doing. And that side of it's really cool. The full electrics are going to be have some unique challenges, and they're going to have different service needs, and I'm fully aware. And that part of that is, you know, with the building of our new shop, we're going to be also building that shop with those thoughts in mind, as the automotive industry is going to be vastly different in 15 years. So we better be prepared for that. And we are definitely thinking in that direction all the time.
Great insight. Great insight. I can't wait to hear all about it in our future episodes. What's your preferred way of getting training to your techs?
Well, we do a couple different things. We have a local trainer that does monthly meetings, focus group training. So this local trainer gets a group of about 15 local technicians together every month. And a couple things he does. Number one, he asks them, what are you seeing in your bays that are challenging? What is unique? What is different? And when the techs are meeting every month, they pass the feedback both directions. So when he hears enough concerns about, I have trouble diagnosing this particular problem, or we see these symptoms and don't know how to test for it, he goes in there and spends his time researching it, writing the curriculum for it. And then 3 months later, he can present that information to them. They have the same group of, let's say, 15 techs every month meeting. So they all get to know each other really well, become part of each other's network. So we get phone calls from these other shops going, can I speak to, you know, one of the techs that they're in the class with? And now they're offering each other lifelines in their different areas of expertise. So having the techs connected outside the shop with other technicians is really valuable. getting the training that they actually need instead of what somebody came to them and says, here's what we want to teach you. That's really valuable. And that's what we've had for years is we had, you know, many times the training courses were brought to you by your parts supplier and they said, this month we're teaching variable power steering. And it's like, great, but we don't really have problems with that. Here's what we'd like to have training on. Well, it never gets back. So this system works pretty well. And then there's other local training available. The AC Delco training we found really valuable. They do that locally. We can send our technicians to that either daytime or evening. I don't like to waste my technicians' time, so I prefer to send them in the daytime. We'll compensate them for their training so that they don't lose their personal time and go during the day when their minds are fresh. That's been really good.
So it's like a technician's forum.
It kind of is. It's a small group, but it works really well for them. So we're really happy. We're probably into that for about 5 years. We've been doing it now, and the results have been really impressive. I've seen a huge improvement with our diagnostic, and that is definitely the number one source for training for us.
Scott, what's your dream car? Do you own it?
My dream car. Well, you know, I have the car that I bought when I was 17 years old in grade 11 in high school, and I still have that car today. And it's a unique car. It's a 1966 Pontiac Beaumont. Now, that's a car most of the American listeners will never have heard of because it's a Canadian-only car. It was built in Quebec, and it is unique being... Basically, it's like a Canadian version of the GTO. It's a Chevelle sheet metal. It is a kind of a mixture of Chevelle and GTO. And the headlights, the taillights, the bumpers are all 100% unique. And it is basically, for intents and purposes, a hybrid between a Chevelle and a GTO. And I bought that car when I was in high school, and I managed to keep it, which is really lucky. If I wasn't in the automotive business and didn't have a place to store the thing, I probably would have gotten rid of it at some point because it was off the road from 98 until about 3 years ago when I got to a point in life where the kids were old enough and I finally was financially in a position where I could finally fix the thing up again. And so off the road from until 2014, that's a long time. But during that time, I managed to get it restored, and I really enjoyed a car. It is really nice to have it back, and I've just in the last 2 years started driving it again during the summer, and it's still kind of my dream car.
Well, thanks for that. Appreciate that. Well, I want to tell you, I appreciate so much a Canadian perspective on things, which you did provide us. We learned, obviously, that you can't work for anyone, that you're an entrepreneur, that you're getting ready to build your own building. How exciting. So Scott Waddle of Precision Auto Service in Langley, British Columbia. Scott, give us some great words to live by.
I don't know if I'm the one to give great words to live by, but I do have one, I think one phrase that I use periodically that I think applies to business and life. And I know I pulled this from somebody else, like all my other good ideas. I believe that the phrase that if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything is very true in life. So I think that you have to you got to find your point and say this is the right thing to do, this is the right way to do it, or this is important to me, and be willing to stand up and do the right thing.
Excellent. Thanks so much. Appreciate you being on, Scott.
Thanks, Carm. I really appreciate it too. Enjoyed it.
Hey, aftermarketers, thanks for joining us. For an in-depth episode experience, don't miss the show notes for this episode with Scott Waddle. Find them exclusively on the show's episodes page at remarkableresults.biz/E141. Hey, if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can do it over the phone at 716-320-1567, 716-320-1567, and via email at carm@remarkableresults.biz. Hey, one more thing. You are an important reason I bring you these interviews, so you can profit from the insight, wisdom, and ideas found in each episode. So help spread the word via email or social media. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Hey, go do some sharing. Thanks. I'm grateful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.